I figured opening this bit where lifetime is something you probably wouldn't be familiar with or as familiar with, but
controversial, Pete.
Controversial, yeah. Well, I don't think it is, because the speed, it's fucking so fast. I mean, I couldn't believe when I first heard this and then the Hello Bastards album, how fast it was. But it's still keeping the, I don't know, like Diagnostic Gorilla Biscuits thing, but like fucking way fast. It made more sense after I heard the interview with the guitarist, Dan Yeaman, where he was talking about how bands, like how John Henry West basically sort of like revolutionized what he was doing or what they were doing, like in terms of the approach. I mean, it seemed to have a big effect on the band, and you can tell because they went from a kind of a slower, moshier, hardcore sound to just like overnight being like this, just amped up, just really, really over the top, kind of fast. But the melody, they've still got all the melodic elements, which I was really attracted to when I was, like 15. So I don't know. Is this your first time hearing this?
Do you know what? I actually owned, for this, I had this not on the 7-inch, but I had the 7-inches LP.
And
I
had that's all I've got, yeah.
New Jersey's Best Dancers, or West Dancers in New Jersey, whatever it's called. And I had the first three LPs anyway. And I never really liked any of them, but I kept buying them. It just never, I have a problem with it. Again, I have a problem with his voice. That's a bit too, it's trying too hard.
Well, it's not. He's got the snotty vocals, isn't he?
For me, it doesn't convey anything. It's like, for me, this kind of stuff, I love Sam I Am.
Yeah.
And his vocals carry the songs. There's like that, and not that they're super fast, like Lifetime or anything. But do you know what I mean? It's like, there's that melody, and there's still a fair bit of speed, but his... Mm-hmm. I don't know, I kind of missed it with Ari's vocals. It never, especially on that first LP, I think, and it's such a weird production on that song. There's so much kick drum.
Yeah.
And I end up focusing on kick drum. I have a problem with kick drums that are too high in the mix. It really bugs me. And Lifetime, that first Lifetime LP is littered with it. And obviously when I got more Hello Bastards and New Jersey's Best Dancers, you know, they got much more better production, especially when they got onto J-Train stuff, and they were okay, but they did these songs and just none of them stuck. So you can listen to a whole LP, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess we'll have to be from New Jersey to fully understand.
When my mum moved out of her house, I'd left a couple of boxes of records there, and in one of the boxes was all three Lifetime LPs. These got donated to a shitty little record shop on County Road in Walton, Liverpool. There was all three of them. There was both Split Lip LPs, the first four Promise Ring LPs. Honestly.
Yeah.
Oh, just because I couldn't fit any, and I'd been over from Sweden and I couldn't fit any in the suitcase to take back. And I'd focused on the wrong records, and now I haven't got them. Kind of want them again. Not that I'd probably ever listen to them, but just they were mine.
keeping the theme is John Henry West from the well, there was a Gravity 7-inch, but this track's from an Ebullition compilation. Yeah. And that was kind of like the only, because stuff was hard to come by, hard to find, that was the only reason that this track, well, tracks on compilations became like kind of a bit more influential or a bit more, had more impact. Because, you know, you get a compilation LP or 7-inch, it was like, that was maybe the only way to find out a band.
Yeah.
So that was how this one came about. But, yeah.
Well, this was a new track for me from these. I mean, I've got the Gravity 7. But this was this, because when I was reading about where this was from, and there was like a tape from 2021.
They got like, Ebullition did a reissue that was like this 7-inch and some other stuff, like compilation stuff and things, maybe, I don't know, about like 10 odd years ago. And then that got sort of redone as a tape, I think last year maybe, or the year before.
I have kind of mixed feelings about this one. I mean, like I say, this was a new, the first time listening to this, then I think it's one of those cases of I'm listening to this 10 years too late. I think back then, if I'd heard it then, the 7-inch I haven't listened to in God knows how many years. And I kind of like the music because it has got that kind of San Diego sound, I guess. Yeah. I don't even know if they're from San Diego.
It's San Francisco. So
San Francisco, yeah.
Yeah, this is like a Sarah Kirsch band.
Sarah Kirsch band, of course it is. Again, the vocals didn't grab me. And I think that's the thing of it being 10 years too late, or like 20 years too late or whatever. Just it was okay, but not her best stuff.
Yeah.
For me, I know there's a lot, I mean, because you kind of read people talking about John Henry West, and I think I've read about stuff being reissued again and people looking forward to it. And it just seems to be one of those bands that, yeah, okay, I know they were around, I've got the 7-inch, but that was it. That was as far as my interest went with them.
Finally got that 7-inch from Looney Tunes, of all places. I don't know how the fuck he got some of the records, because there was some just bizarre stuff in the list, and you'd really have to scour it because it was like tiny.
Oh, that's all part of the charm, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. What a good place to get it from. It kind of left me a bit underwhelmed, honestly. Okay.
But, you know, move on to the next pick, which is Fuel.
Oh, so
which probably makes a difference there for you.
Talk about your Sarah Kirsch projects that just absolutely rule. I mean, I know, I don't. One thing with listening stuff, I don't like to compare it to other bands, but I think you can't avoid comparing it to like Fugazi. You know, there is that, especially on the LP, and this track's off a split 7-inch. Yeah,
yeah.
This reminds me more of Rites of Spring.
Yeah, I thought this one was more interesting because it's like the last track that they recorded.
Yeah.
And it's recorded in different places. It's the same guy, Tim Mack, who recorded all the Amphetamine Reptile stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
Weird. Because I think it's quite a thin recording, but I think that sound suits Fuel, what they do.
Yeah.
The LP is quite a beefy sound. And it's okay, but this sounds much rawer and like, fuck.
The vocals are just immense, I think.
Vocals are so, I mean, unbelievably good. I thought, again, because I knew we were going to be doing this, and I played the few LP in the car, and the vocals are just, oh my God, it's something else, you know?
Yeah.
Just absolutely, it's like no time had passed since the last I heard it. And I don't know if I've heard this song before because I haven't got this split.
Mm-hmm.
I may have had it at one stage and it's gone the way of many other things, but bloody, I really love this song. I thought it's such a crack. Fuel for me, a top quality band.
Oh, yeah. It was just that was another group for me. I mean, it must have just been around the time of when Allied had released that CD, and I got it from like for like £6 or something from Active.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I was just totally taken with the whole thing for months, and then for a long time, just couldn't stop. listening to the stuff.
It takes all the urgency and all the greatness of Right to Spring, and then it just, for me, it just bumps it up a little bit. I think because the vocals are so, just so out, just some of the drawn out. Because you can't even say screeches, but just the longing and the desperation. I love a desperate voice. I'm really drawn to a desperate voice, and it's that in spades. You know, it's just, oh my God, so good. That made me want this. Made me want to track down this 7-inch. I think I'm going to pick up the 7-inch on Discogs because I should own it.
I think it's Flag Camp.
Yeah, they did the split. This is the split with Angry Sun. This was on Scheme.
That's right, Angry Sun.
And that's why it's got it's got that Scheme production. Scheme always did like really ropey kind of, not tinny, but kind of shallow production, which kind of suited a lot of the stuff going on. I mean, it's weird that they did the split with Flag Camp, because Flag Camp always got compared to Soulside. You know, always got compared to Fugazi. So there's like that, the kind of weird DC tie-in. Well, I mean, I like both bands as well, so. But I really, really like this track. I thought it was cracker.
Right, cool. And then moving on to another track, which just, I mean, you can't fucking argue with the vocals, you know, and all the bands, like all those bands, all the like Sarah Kirsch stuff, like Fuel, and then like John Henry West, Soul Horse, Torches to Rome, Bread and Circuits.
Skin Flutes as well.
Oh, Skin Flutes, that was Sawhorse.
Yeah,
I think.
Before Sawhorse,
But
yeah, I mean, Tortures to Rome was, Joe, you know, I've never heard Tortures to Rome.
Never heard them?
Never heard them, first time I've heard them today.
Fucking hell, man.
Yeah, I know.
It was the For Want Of compilation, the Xmas compilation that
Do you know what? I tell a lie. I've got a Torches to Rome track on that For Want Of compilation.
That was the one that came out about a year before, because the albums were always like mixed a year later.
Yeah, yeah.
We were like recording, the band had already split up, and then this one was the recording from the demo, I think.
Okay.
For Want Of. Just because it's like more feedback, and when that kicks in, it's just like, you know, fuck off, basically.
I need to dig that out, because I mean, this, the Torches to Rome track, this is from the LP,
Oh, actually, no, it was Torches to Rome, the song was on the compilation, and the Young Arsenal track is from the album,
right? Okay, because I was surprised just how screamy the vocals were,
yeah.
Because you kind of expect, well, it's a Sarah Kirsch vehicle, it's going to be within the parameters. And musically, maybe it's not a million miles away, but vocally, it's a step up.
Oh, it's rasping.
It's
like the Right to Spring style.
Yeah.
Just ridiculous, kind of harsh.
Yeah, absolutely. I was massively surprised by how much I like this song.
I'm gonna make you mine. I'm gonna break.
Gallipus compilation on Tree Records, current track from that, Bastille, which is speak if you want, you know.
Where do you start with Current? I mean, it's nice that you picked this track, the Bastille track, because it's one of their more hardcore sounding tracks, I reckon.
Yeah, it's more in line with Torches to Rome, I think.
Yeah. You can definitely, again, when he's doing the screams in the second half of the song, he's still got that, because he has that really nice kind of hoarse, raspy, almost talking voice that I always liked.
I love that, Matthias Weeks, his voice, anytime that's on anything, it's just like,
it's just that, you know where it is straight away as well.
Yeah.
Even when they did the whole Ottawa thing, and you can still hear that it's Matt, and it's just, you know it's Current doing just pure angry hardcore. Current for me are just absolutely phenomenal. Again, you know, I don't get why they're doing this box set thing, but everyone should own Colosseum. It's a fantastic album. And I've never heard, I like everything I've got by Current. I play it quite a lot because it's just something else. And that Eucalyptus compilation is just, there's not a weak song on it. Magnificent piece of work.
What does your copy look like? Because mine's...
It's a kind of browny beige with... Just a little. I was going to go in and get it, but I can't be bothered.
That's fine, because I think there's a few versions, because it's got some.
That's right, yeah.
Does yours look like handwriting on the back? It's like handwritten.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, cursive handwritten, like just the name of the band.
Yeah, it's real. It was a real emo moment, that one. It was like before all the kind of earnestness was abandoned. You know, it was really like a particularly.
I always hated that emo got such a bad, like Current and Indian Summer and all that got such a bad rap. I mean, you know, mostly thanks to the thing that Maximum Rock and Roll saying that it's not punk. And I'm sorry, but you know, it's kids putting these things together, recording it themselves, doing all the artwork themselves, filling it full of writing and information, gluing it all together, sending it off 200 copies. I mean, that's punk as fuck.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, and they play this music, yet sure they can play. That's the difference, they can play. It's still got bags of meaning, bags of emotion. And it really pissed me off that it kind of got shunned by the all the snobby punk fucking elite. What's emo and what's not? What's punk? What's not? For me, punk is DIY, do it yourself. Go out and just do it, make it yourself, get it out there. That's exactly what they did. They never made any money. They all pile in a van and you might get to the show and you might get home. That's it. You don't get much more punk than that. So I thought it was always unjust that they got called out on that kind of stuff. Current was just something above and beyond for me. Always loved from the minute I heard Current, it was just something with them, because they avoided that whole kind of Fugazi thing, but still did the kind of intricacies and the poetic lyrics. And I mean, all the records are just full of little nuggets and poetry and they're good stuff that people are probably sniggering at, but that's what I wanted. That's what I got.
Yeah.
of Uranus. In brackets, parentheses, whatever. But Uranus is a band. I mean, fucking like this similar. Well, when I was listening to this track, because there's a His Hero Is Gone.
Yeah.
Side. I don't know, what was it released? Yeah, I was going to ask you, what was it released, or was it released in another thought away? Because I know some of the stuff sort of crosses over a bit, or I don't know.
But this wasn't this. This was a demo track, I think.
Yeah, it's 1993 or 94.
Yeah. Again, this was I'd not heard the demo. I only had the that split they did and the double 7-inch.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And again, this as soon as this came on, and I mean, for a demo, the sound is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
It is aggressive as hell.
Yeah.
I mean, these are like what I got. I don't know what was going on in Canada at the time, but the vocals in these bands were just fucking insane. One Eye God Prophecy, Union of Uranus, even Ire and The Black Hand, the first 10-inch on The Black Hand. Drift, I mean, just
another band, yeah.
Absolutely staggering. Like, total, like, I mean, we're talking, you know, Bremen, Germany, qualities of metal aggression. But just, and then you see them and they're just these young, lovely little fellas.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, I mean, this was a, I loved hearing this. This was a new song from a band that I like quite a lot, and it was fantastic.
This side is it's pinnacle stuff, I think. I mean,
yeah,
was this End of Things like an influence for Narcosis, these bands that you were listening to?
No, because I think this was a bit before, because we had a weird kind of crossover. I was still doing Hard to Swallow, I think, when all this stuff was around. Or I was kind of getting towards the end of Underclass, going into, I think, Red Right Hand had started.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was, there was this like weird crossover kind of time there. Because Hard to Swallow played with His Hero Was Gone. And I mean, I did that show with them. And so we were kind of, I think Hard to Swallow was more around when this kind of stuff was taken off. And Narcosis, I don't think.
Well, the next track, His Hero Is Gone track, so they're definitely a band that would have had an influence on Narcosis. Then.
Again, I think so, but I couldn't answer for the others 100%. His Hero Is Gone is weird because I really like the first 7-inch and the first LP, and I'd kind of drifted, I think, a bit. I didn't pick up this LP, The Plot Thickens.
Yeah.
And
this
I never
is the last
I never,
one, yeah. It's one that you don't or never really gets spoken about as much, I don't think, but it's, you're not going to get a drop in quality or anything like that.
No. But I think it wasn't as, like, the first 7-inch especially was so unhinged because all the power and aggression of, like, kind of, like, full-on crust and just really aggro hardcore, like, little blast beats and stuff. But then the vocals are kind of, while he's growling, there's still the high-pitched screaming coming in. And I always like that kind of crossover with stuff. You know, that's what I tried to do when I was doing Narcosis. Kind of, I love that juxtaposition of having something really dark and something really kind of high-end screamy. You know, and so, I mean, it was quite an influence on me, especially, I mean, going back to joining Heart to Swallow and then going through to Narcosis. Live, they just fucking leveled the place.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible sight to behold. What can you say? So again, this was a song that I'm not that familiar with by them, but it was a real refresher that shit, I need to listen to His Hero Is Gone again.
This has more the tragedy bits coming through.
That's right.
Where it gets a bit more melodic and that, and a bit kind of.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But it's not as where the other stuff was just like just full on, just go nuts. By this time, they've like kind of learned control a bit, I guess. And they were introducing a little bit more melody and stuff. And yeah, you can hear the tragedy, like From Ashes Rise and all the rest of them. You can hear in what they're doing with His Hero. Like all of that was a natural progression from what they were doing. His Hero Was Gone. Because I was always surprised by His Hero Was Gone that they got so much attention, which they did, and rightly so. While Logical Nonsense got kind of half ignored. And they did Expand the Hive, which is just... The first two tracks on that are just insane.
Were they more of an influence than, would you say, vocally?
Yeah, I absolutely. I think my influence still went. It went from being all the screamo emo stuff to realizing that I'm not the best screamer in the world, but I like, I try and I do it and whatever. But then there was stuff like Drop. I loved the fury of Drop Dead. I loved his aggro. Fucking really gets a point across. So there was that, and then the deeper stuff came in when I heard Discord and Saxus.
Yeah,
that's just the position, and you got the one singer doing the both, and that was a real kick in the pants for me. That was a real wow. I wish I could do that. was a real kickstart. That was a mass. They obviously that and Arse Destroyer was a huge influence on Narcosis' approach, because I came in after John had done vocals on the first 7-inch. And his vocals were much more extreme than what I was doing. And I unfortunately went in and tried to just copy what he was doing, which I couldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
So then I have to kind of find, there's a lot of trial and error at the beginning, I think, and it was me just trying to find my own way of doing it. And I think it, especially when we got towards the second LP, like it definitely came across more because I was more involved in writing the lyrics this time, whereas the first LP, the lyrics already written. So it was nice to kind of find what I could do and just try and push it and push it and push it. But again, like not being a proper vocalist, I was singing from the wrong place and I was fucking my throat up for every opportunity. I'd always had problems with it. I was still smoking at the time, which is such a stupid thing to do when you're doing that. So it was always, I think as well, it became much more extreme when we started doing like the second version of Red Right Hand, the much slower version, because that was all about just, I always loved Floor. The early Floor 7-inches.
Oh, yeah.
And the early Cavity stuff. And that was a huge influence on doing the slower stuff. And so with doing one slow band and this incredibly fast band, it kind of met in the middle and all the influences kind of all tied in together. I don't know. It was never like a conscious. I mean, all my influences went back to Citizen's Arrest, to be honest, from the beginning. And then Heroin and Mohinder and those screamy emo bands of the early mid-90s. I just try and keep that all the way. Inhumanity was huge, like Nicholas from Fingerprint, like I said. I just love that whole screamy, just belching your lungs out,
Yeah.
And so the reason that the deeper vocals crept in was because it was easier for me to do them. Because I was screwing my voice up so much. So it was trying to put in a bit more, deep, a little bit deeper, a little bit more, trying to still keep the aggression, but without getting headaches and rupture of my spleen.
We'll be right back.
you obviously were familiar with the next group as well, Talk Is Poison.
Oh, again, listen to this today, and I've forgotten just how brutal. I mean, talk about your brutal.
Well, the track title is forgotten.
Yeah, it's just, oh my God, it's just unbelievable. I put that on there, and just Prank Records were doing some fantastic stuff. And just, yeah, as soon as I put Forgotten on, it was just, oh my God, listen to his voice. Absolutely fantastic stuff.
Yeah. There's a YouTube clip of them doing this song.
And, yeah.
It just, the bit where they do, three of them do like a gang vocals. It's just yeah. Like, fuck me, man.
Fucking
love it. Love it. It's just yeah. Immense. It makes the thing just so much better when everyone just starts like pounding a chorus yeah. or something or a line. It's just like, fuck.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I mean, yeah, going back to vocal, and I can't believe I missed this. Rich from Stalingrad is probably the most most intimidated I've ever been by a vocalist.
Got some stories about seeing Stalingrad. I remember the first time we were only young, you know, 15, 16.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were sitting on the sort of couch bit of the pub or wherever it was. It was quite far away from the stage. But then he came over along mic leave, and then he sat down while he was doing the set, just screaming. He's absolutely full of fucking, you know, fully at it to this group of kids, and we were just like shitting it, you know.
I mean, we got tied in with Stalingrad quite early on because we did the first split. We had our first split with them, and then our first tour in Europe was with Stalingrad. And so me and Rich, we became quite close friends, and we remain friends to this day. But I remember seeing him early on at the 1 in 12, and I was absolutely terrified of him.
Yeah.
You know, just, the thing of, he used to whisper in people's ears. Oh, he'd be screaming in their face and like wrapping his legs and his arms around him. And he'd be whispering the words to Vienna by Ultravox in their ear.
the second time I saw him, I think, was just rolling around on the floor, like chewing people's shoes.
Yeah. Yes, that's quite right. I mean, it was just such a spectacle. And it was like, I mean, you know, the rest of the band are just standing there and they're playing away and they're not, they've got no, good. Yeah, not at all. They're just doing their thing and Rich is doing his thing and it just came together. It's like such a massively powerful band. When we had the tracks, like, I mean, Underclass, we were always so unsure of what we were doing. We weren't massively music. We had one drummer was good, Mousy was a fantastic guitarist, and then we had two people that were kind of not learning instruments but weren't massively comfortable with them, and I didn't really know what I was doing. And then we got a split with Stalingrad, and we had a split with Hard to Swallow. And when we heard both of these splits, it's just like, well, what's the fucking point? You know, you kind of give up. So, I mean, you get the tracks back from Hard to Swallow, and the first song on it is Only a Glimpse Of. For me, still one of my favourite hardcore songs of all time. Mm-hmm. You know, just from that drum, and then Goy doing that first verse, and it's just like, Jesus wept. And the same with Stalingrad. Just this pounding, horrible, miserable, screamy as hell music. Something else. Really, really glorious stuff. Yeah, where were we? Yeah. Talk Is Poison, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, there's been so many incredible vocalists from all that time ago. So just the fact that, again, put on Talk Is Poison, then you know the band, and you've forgotten them, and then you put it on, and he starts screaming, and you're like, oh my God. Just want to fall to your knees and just give up.
onto the last two, sort of wrapping up side, the first side of the tape.
Yes.
This is Creeps on Candy and then No Means No. But I mean, I don't know what you know about Creeps on Candy.
Right. Creeps on Candy. I listened to the song. I've never heard the name of the band before. Right. And as soon as I put the song on, I said to myself, okay, now that sounds so like Dead and Gone.
It's basically the third Dead and Gone LP, because I think they sort of broke up. They got this, they just continued on as a band, but without the singer, but they just got a new singer. Because they came back with, like, the Beautician, and that was just, like, absolutely raging, a whole different thing. And then I was wondering how they got from between the albums, and then this is the obvious sort of bridge.
I think Dead and Gone was one of those bands that kind of got overlooked as well, because they had the kind of whole powerful, not really Neurosis, but kind of Neurosis thing going, but with that kind of almost gothic slant.
Oh, yeah, love Dead and Gone, like, love them.
Yeah, really, really good. So as soon as this came on, I thought, is this Dead and Gone? So yeah, you go on the computer, wherever, and check out who it is, Creeps on Candy, what label it's on, what. I saw all the people there. Oh, bloody hell, it is Dead and Gone, for all intents and purposes. Yeah, totally pleasantly surprised by that. I wasn't massively keen on the name, truth be told.
Yeah, it's a strange name, like.
It is a strange name, absolutely. Dead and Gone, that kind of suits what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Creeps on Candy, but yeah, massively pleasant song, really, really good.
And, well, that album's on Alternative Tentacles.
That's right, yeah.
An Alternative Tentacles band, but this song's from a...
That's the old kind.
It's a 7-inch on Allied. It's a DOA cover, this one, No Means No.
That's right, yeah. So I thought it was a bit of an odd choice.
Yeah, just sort of throw it on last because, you know, that's what you kind of end a tape with, really.
Yeah, okay.
Something like that, you know.
Yeah.
You run out of space, you're reaching for like something that's like 2 minutes long or a minute, whatever it is, you know, it's a short track and you're just like, oh, fuck, I'll put this on, you know. It's No Means No, so that's all I'm saying about it. It's the best fucking band I've ever witnessed, you know, play. Heard the records forever.
Yeah, I only saw them the once, unfortunately, and that was in Leeds University, I think. And they were just an absolute powerhouse. You know, it's like, I think it's nice that you put a No Means No song that's not, because it's a DOA cover. I mean, you know, the Subhumans cover on the other side. And it's not very typically No Means No sounded. Maybe the sound's there, but it's not what you expect.
Something not like. At the time, I remember it around about, I mean... Because it was in the times where, I don't know, you kind of latch onto a band and then stuff was pretty cheap and pretty easily available. So it was just something I ended up picking and it didn't sound like, you know, the LP stuff or anything else.
No, absolutely
it was just, and then you get it on a 7-inch, it's 45, and then it's only like a small, like half inch, but a like actual groove that's there. And you're just like, oh, wow.